Put your hands together and welcome your very own Dunstable Town Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the Talk of the Town podcast. I'm your host, Andy Burrows, and I am joined by my illustrious co-host. For those of you watching on YouTube, yes, he is in his car, Mr. Matty Carrington. How are you, sir?
Yeah, not so bad. I was a bit surprised we're doing this podcast. It's not as if there's any news going on.
It's been a very, very slow news day. It's been a slow news day in the world of Dunstable. Even so slow that we thought we'd get the chairman on. Mr. Chairman, Andrew, how are you, sir? Thanks for coming on the pod.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Matt. I'm fine, Jim. Good to speak to you both, and good to see you both. I like the new venture into recording it, Andy, for the YouTube.
Yes, I've reached out to Brad today. We're hopefully going to stick all our podcasts. I know they get great downloads on the audio side of it, but we're going to do the visuals as well. So anyone that wants to watch our podcast, you can log on to the Great Dunstable Town YouTube page. Brad does a tremendous job over there. Just click on it and hopefully all our podcasts, all our actual shows will be up when me and Matt do them on a weekly basis. But all joking aside, Andrew, it has been quite an eventful day. For those that don't know, Dunstable Town manager Joe Deeney announced today that he's leaving at the end of the season to go on to a job in the professional game. I'll let him get into that when I interview him tomorrow to say what it is. But Andrew, did it come as a bit of a surprise, or was this something that's been in the pipeline? Obviously, you can tell us what you can tell us. I'm not here to throw you under the bus or anything, but obviously Joe leaving, he's had two and a bit really good seasons at Dunstable Town, albeit this season hasn't been the best, but that's been for various reasons that I'm sure we'll get into later. But how did the events of today unfold, Andrew?
So was it a surprise? No, not entirely, Andy. We'd sat down with Joe, Kyle and Ant the bank holiday Monday, Easter Monday. We had a meeting with the guys in the CBS hub, and that was really for the directors to say to the guys, look, we're already thinking ahead of next season. We'd very much like you guys to stay. You're still very much part of what we're trying to build at the club. We'd sort of be very interested to know exactly where your heads are at the moment. And Joe told us at the meeting that he had an interview lined up. It had only sort of been confirmed sort of a little while earlier. So we knew at that stage that there was the possibility that Joe would be snapped up by a club to do what he does best, which is, which is coaching and managing. So when he gave us the heads up a couple of days ago that he was going to accept the job, it was news that we half expected, but we very much hoped. And that's a horrible thing to say in a sense, isn't it? Because we've got so much time for Joe, so much love for the man, that it's almost like not wanting a friend of yours to do well or succeed or get the job that he was going for, because, well, that's just doing it for selfish reasons, isn't it? So, we're delighted for Joe. Genuinely, I can say that hand on heart. We are delighted for Joe that he's back in a job that he wants to be doing. It's look, it's sad for us. It's sad news for the club, because, we've been, like you say, we've been fortunate for the last 2.5 years to have Joe at the club, at the helm, playing a style of football which, you look at supporter numbers, supporter numbers have doubled in the time that Joe's been there. We've got a much younger fan base. The whole ethos of the club has sort of been, I think, improved by Joe, Kyle and Anthony sort of being with us. So, he leaves with our blessing, Andy, and we wish him nothing but the best. And I know he'll do well and succeed. And, you know, we're genuinely happy for the man that he's got the job that he wants. And I know if we sort of ask his advice about who his successor might be, he will sort of, he might read the odd CV for us and you know, sort of, you know, give us the benefit of his advice. He has been an absolute diamond to work with. I genuinely say that. You know, this was, you know, really my sort of first introduction as chairman in terms of, you know, saying goodbye to one manager, welcoming in another, and then sort of getting to know somebody and, you know, working closely with him. And you know, Joe has just made that job so incredibly easy and straightforward. You know, he you know, what you see is what you get. There's no, you know, there's no other side to Joe. He is exactly as he appears, and that's straightforward and straight talking and efficient and, you know, hugely respectful, hugely polite, genuinely, I'd say, loved by supporters. And, you know, even you see that, you know, 5-5 home games, away games, you know, even when the results have gone against us, you know, supporters always stay. They always clap the boys off. They always, you know, will come and chat to Joe in the bar afterwards. I can tell you genuinely when I've been sort of, you know, sending out my WhatsApp messages about forthcoming matches and people saying, can't make this one, can't make Saturday, can't make Tuesday, can't make the Q&A, but please do everything you can do to persuade Joe to stay for, you know, next season. So, yeah, look, he's going to be a hard act to follow, Andy. And like I say, you know, he's been fantastic for the club. He's, if you look at successes, just have we gone out of the Spartan back into the Southern League? No, we haven't. We were very near it, I think, last season. I think last season was probably the best season we've had at the club for a number of years. But if you measure success in other metrics, and you look at, say, the fan base, if you look at supporter numbers, you know, attendances have grown this season, where, you know, our average aggregate is up compared to last season, despite, you know, losing more matches than we've won, despite some of the, you know, performances which have, you know, not been what we've been used to under Joe's team. So it's been a difficult season. It's been sort of more downs than ups. I was looking forward to sort of, you know, sitting down with Joe over the summer and sort of planning ahead, planning the pre-season friendlies, looking at, you know, a retained list, looking at who would be sort of the players that they felt they wanted to recruit to bring in for next season, so that next season would sort of, you know, right, okay, let's just wipe the slate clean and start again and see where we get to. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen, but, you know, I know already from the number of managers that have contacted me and asked for meetings, asked for conversations, that, you know, there's some excellent candidates who have not formally put their hand to the ring, because we haven't announced the process in terms of how we'll go about selecting the new manager. But there are some good names out there, and I you know, long term, Andy, you know, we'll be fine, mate. It's you know, I've got absolutely no concerns, and I sort of reassure supporters that even with Joe's departure, there'll be another very decent manager coming in to fill his shoes.
Matt, you're out of your car now, which is good to see. How would you best describe, before I give my two penneth worth, how would you best describe the Joe Deeney era at Dunstable Town? Come in very difficult situations. I think we had not long been knocked out of the cup by British Airways away, if I remember. I remember being over there on a Saturday when we conceded like a last minute goal. We had, I think we had 10 men on the pitch or something, something to do with the sin bin, if I vaguely remember. Joe come into it. Yeah. I described it back at like then, and I've described it to people as he come into a club and, you know, Gareth done a very, very good job at Dunstable Town and took it where he could take it. I think Joe come into Dunstable Town, it's a bit like when you go into a business and you know that certain things need rebuilding in that business. You know, certain departments need to have this done, you know, certain personnel need that pep talk, you know, people might have been there for years, but just a fresh voice, fresh ideas. And I think Joe brought that to the club in abundance, you know, brought in people like Anthony and Dirks and Jammers, was originally, you know, a player, then transitioned to the coaching staff. But Matt, how would you best describe the Joe Deeney era at Dunstable Town?
If I was to use one word, passionate. The guy obviously wears his heart on his sleeve. And just take my tie off as I've now got back in the office.
This ain't one of them kind of podcasts, Matt.
Yeah, definitely passionate. The guy exudes passion. And to be honest, that was always great for me because I find myself quite similar to Joe in terms of that because, you know, I'm a kind of heart and sleeve bloke. Emotions ain't too far from the surface. And yeah, Joe just exuded passion every time he was out on the pitch, every time we spoke to him, passionate about everything he wanted to do with the club. As we say, has this been the most successful season on the pitch? No. And I think Joe will be his own biggest critic of that. But as Andrew said, you know, it's more than just results. The one thing that I think will be remembered from Joe being at the club is his support that he gave Ian and the Bateman family after tragically what happened to Aaron. Obviously going to court with them all the time, helping them out, being there every step of the way. And literally, he's going to be leaving the club with a lot of friends, if I'm being honest. And whilst, yeah, I'm sad to see him go, I'm happy for my friends to get a promotion, essentially, and get a job in a field that he will do a great job in.
Yeah, I can only echo what you said, Matt. Obviously, I'll sit down with Joe. I think we're doing an interview. Brad's just texted me. I think we're doing an interview with him tomorrow for the YouTube channel, and then we'll have the post match. So it's not our place to say where Joe's going or what he's doing, but you know, it's a tremendous opportunity for him. The best thing that I can say about Joe is, it's wonderful to see our friend going on to bigger and better things, and he's got, you know, he's going to work in the professional game, and you know, there isn't a person out here that loves football that wouldn't want to go and work in the professional game. Best thing I can probably say about Joe is the influence that you can see that he's had on people. He's had an influence on the football side of things, which is great, and as he should do. He's the manager of the football team. But the influence that he's had on people, I can speak for myself. Andrew, Matt, I know fans that, you know, listen to this, that we chat to. Obviously, you mentioned Ian there and Scotty and everyone else. That he's had such an influence on people's lives, you know, just in general. I mean, the guy hasn't died or anything. We're not doing his obituary, but he's had an influence on people at the club. You know what I mean? He's been generous with his time. Every time I've texted him about a podcast, you know, he's had me, Alfie and Connor ringing him at 11:30 at night when we've had a few sherbets too many, and we FaceTimed him in the middle of late and buzzed, and he's always taken that with good humour. People judge Joe a lot from what they see on the sidelines. And yeah, he's a passionate man. He's a passionate manager. But there's definitely more to him than that. When you actually sit down and you had a conversation with him about football, and you realise that the knowledge he's got, not just of the non-league game, but of the youth setup in and around the country, or of higher levels that you go up the pyramid in football. You know, I was sitting in the dugout with him last weekend, and he was telling me things that, you know, that had gone on in his football life, and the people that he had influences on, and that he's met, and that have, you know, helped him throughout his career. And he's just thinking, wow, this, you know, this guy's been there and done more than you would know. So he's going to leave an impression on Dunstable Town that's going to be very hard to replace. But like he's always said, he's like the custodial of Dunstable Town. We all are, you know, none of us are going to be here at Dunstable Town forever. We just hope we leave the football club in a better way than we found it. And albeit this season hasn't been great, and Joe will be the first to admit that, and I'm sure when we sit down and chat to him tomorrow and we talk on Tuesday at his last game, he'll be the first to admit that this season we haven't reached the levels that he would want to reach. Like Andrew said, last season we were so close, we nearly took it down to that last game away at Stotfold. We just missed out by a couple of points, and it was out of our hands come the last game. But that was definitely the most fun I had in the 3.5, nearly 4 years that I had been at Dunstable Town. Andrew, how hard is it going to be now to fill Joe's shoes? Because obviously, you know, it's a bit like any, you look at when Alex Ferguson left Man United or when Arsene Wenger left Arsenal, any level of football, once a manager with such a big personality does leave, you've got to, it's never easy for anyone to step in because a football club isn't used to being run a certain way. How important is it for yourself and Matt and the rest of the board of directors that the next appointment carries on the work that Joe's done, but they're allowed to put their own stamp on the football team? Andrew, you're on mute. That's probably one of the best questions I've ever asked. And then he was on mute. Now you're definitely on mute. There we go.
We okay now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah, massively important, Andy. But it's a decision that we won't rush. We will take our time and make sure that we open up the field for applicants to apply. I mean, the process that we used for Joe's appointment was literally put an advert out, went through every application, took up references in a sense where we sort of wanted more information, shortlisted and interviewed, and we sort of hired a room at the Holiday Inn Express on High Street South. We interviewed over the course of a Saturday, and Joe was the successful candidate. Well, I imagine, Andy, we'll do a very similar process. As I say, from the conversations and inquiries I've had during the day, there are some very, very decent, very interesting candidates who are already showing an interest in Joe's job.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
It's important, you know, ultimately, and, you know, Matt and I have sort of, you know, lots of conversations and around the director's table, similar conversations about, you know, when is the right time for promotion. And I'm sort of one of the directors who is at the moment sort of, you know, relatively content for us as a club to make sure that our foundations are properly strong and secure. This is, you know, this, you know, I go back to being a community benefit society, a community fan-owned club, but we're only 3 years into that journey, Andy. Mm. And I'm, you know, one of the many reasons why clubs go down the whole community fan-owned route is to make sure that you've got a sustainable future, that you're not spending money that you don't have. You're not trying to buy your way out of a league to get promotion. And there is that, you know, I guess I'm one of these very risk averse people in an awful lot of contexts. And for the moment, if we need to stay at step five for a season or two seasons or three seasons longer, and we are providing, well, I was going to say Joe, but, you know, Joe's replacement with a budget which is affordable, that can get us out of the league and then be sustainable at step four, that for me would be the appropriate way to go. Now, I know colleagues think that we're probably all already there. So, you know, there are seven directors and you'll get sort of slightly different opinions depending on who you were talking to. So for me, yeah, very, you know, hugely important that we appoint, you know, the right person, not just for next season, but it may be next season and the season after that we're still at step five, maybe the season after that. And that's not necessarily a complete enough.
Matt's going to get his tie back out and just blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I know. And it
only because we don't want to go to Sorbageworth and Stansted again.
It goes back to Andy, and it really does. And maybe, you know, maybe I've drunk too much of the Kool-Aid, but, you know, it goes back to that. I want Dunstable Town to be around in 50 years' time. I want us to be here for all the younger supporters that, you know, are coming to see us on match days. I don't want them to have the same experience that Matt had when he was younger, when there wasn't a Dunstable Town to support. So for me, it's massively important that we get the structures in place, that we get the sources of income to be sustainable and reliable, that we're able to, you know, continue with the community projects, because that in a sense is key to the club's long-term survival. Without those, you then just go back to being a football club. And being just a football club, when you don't own your ground and you don't own the clubhouse, we've been down that route, Andy. We know how that song ends. So we have to be doing something different.
Okay.
So that sort of bit of me, which is slightly just very cautious about overstepping the mark, wants to make sure that whoever we appoint understands the context that we play in, buys into the whole community ethos of the club, and is able to manage, you know, step five and also going into step four.
Yeah, I think Andrew's Bob on there. Whilst we want to make sure we have the best candidate for the club to get us as successful as we can, the important thing for me is to make sure we have somebody who buys into the Dunstable Town identity as well. I must admit, I'm on the other side of the table from Andrew. I want us to get up the league, and we have had conversations in the past about it. But I share his view in terms of we can't do so unless we are going to be sustainable in at the next level. There's no point going up and then literally circling the drain straight away. We need to make sure we have a good foundation, that we grow and go up into the league above, and hopefully the league above that, but in a sustainable, strong nature. So we are still able to sustain our crowds. We are still able to sustain the budget for whoever comes in. And yeah, I mean, whether we have somebody come in and that can get us to the next level this season, then great, fantastic. But if it takes two or three seasons done in the right way, yeah, I do agree with Andrew to that extent, but I want us to go up. And I don't hide that view that I want us up next season, because, yeah, I've enjoyed my time going to places, and I want to see some new grounds, and that's how I'm going to sell it. I want to go see...
That's my party line, and I'm sticking to it. Matty, just quickly, mate, just before we've got about another 10, 15 minutes to wrap up the show, with seven directors... how hard is the process? Maybe not hard, but what do you go through as a process with seven directors? I know fans will be, like I've always said to you, I'm not here to throw in under the bus or give away trade secrets, but I know fans will be interested now. With seven of you, and obviously Andrew being the chairman, how is the process of not getting you all on the same table? Because like Andrew just said and put it really well, everyone's going to have a different of opinion. Me and you have spoken about football countless times. We've done it on podcasts. We've done it at games. I'll have an opinion. You'll have an opinion. Then I'll hear your opinion. I'll be like, oh, actually, yeah, that might work here. And you're listening to me. That's football. With seven directors, when you're appointing a new manager, how does that process all come about? Not trying to get you all on the same page, but ultimately getting to the best decision for the club.
Well, I mean, when you're voted in as a director, it's on the understanding that you do the best things, the things in best interest of the club. And whatever decision we make, don't get me wrong, we have had, I wouldn't say humdingers, but there's been some stern conversations sometimes, be it directors' meetings or on WhatsApp, of opposing views. But whatever decision we come to for the right reasons for the club. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, the last time we were lucky because all of us sat in a room, all came to the same conclusion. Joe's our guy. And hopefully we'll come up with that same conclusion this time. But if it comes to it, you know, we'll respect the views of others as is only right and proper to do. And whatever the majority rule, the those who haven't voted for that in that way, respect those that democracy. Because unfortunately, whilst it's you know, it's not the favourite system of mine, democracy is the best system that we have.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, look, football is one of them topics. We're going to get on briefly. We're going to touch on the FA Cup replays in a minute. It divides opinions, and it, you know, yeah, it's we're going to get onto that. But football does divide opinion and disappointment. The people might just be like, well, you know, it's Dunstable Town, blah blah blah. But it's Dunstable Town matters a lot to a lot of people, all three of us, definitely, you know, the 290, 300 plus crowds that we get on a Saturday, the people that follow us that they can't get to on social media. So Dunstable Town matters. So for it's a crucial appointment. And like I've just said, it's not easy to follow Joe. But, and Joe wouldn't mind me saying this, you know, he was the custodial of this club, like I am, like Andrew is, like Matt is, like Neil, like everyone at this club. We're just here for a short time, and we just want to make sure this club is on solid foundations to move on in the future. So I do wish you guys well in the appointment. It's not an easy task, but I know that you guys will come to the right decision. The new manager will be backed. I know that he's got a great network behind him of people that are here to help. You know, he's got a solid fan base to build off, you know. And a season to build off. Yeah, it hasn't been great. So he goes into next season with a clean slate, and we all sit here and go, hey, look, patience is probably a word that we don't like in football that we might have to use next season. We might not. We might start off like a house on fire. We could bring in four or five players and, you know, with a mix of the current lads that are here and everything and the new manager, and it'll all be great. But football has a weird way of not always working like that. So I think, you know, the message to the fans and stuff like that is maybe we might have to be patient for a season. And I am definitely with Matt. I really want to go and see some new grounds. I really don't want to be going down to Stansted and Sawbridge Web. No disrespect, but I've had enough. I want to get out of this league. Boys, just before we wrap up, Andrew, I'll come to you first. The FA announced in the last couple of days, I know Matt's going to have some strong views on him. Me and him love cup runs at this club. Andrew, the FA have announced now from the very first round. So if or when Dunstable Town make the first round of the FA Cup next season, no replays. So for argument's sake, if we drew a League One or League Two team in the FA Cup and we got a 0-0 or a 1-1 at Creasy Park and we got to go to a Peterborough, a Wrexham or wherever it is, then that would not happen. The game would be decided on the day. The FA have scrapped all FA Cup replays from the first round. Admittedly, it doesn't affect loads of non-league teams, but it has been plenty of non-league teams to get to the first round. And me and Matt, we always talk about the FA Cup in August. We would love to have a run. You know, as clubs, you don't budget for the FA Cup and it's all a bonus. Andrew, obviously the backlash has been on Sky. It's been all over Sky today. Clubs have come out. I've seen Peterborough come out. I've seen all the League One, League Two clubs have come out and said, look, we weren't consulted on this. How do you feel as a chairman of a non-league club that the FA have just come out? And it seems to me that the Premier League have just gone, well, we don't really want replays, but, you know, on the other hand, you've got Man City are going to go and play in the World Club Championship and they don't play a league game for 2 weeks with things like that. As the chairman of Dunstable Town, Andrew, how did that announcement, how did that come across to you when you heard it? No FA Cup replays from the first round from next season.
I think the criticism has been universal. I haven't read any document or tweet which has supported the FA's decision. There have been some very, very well-worded statements. I'm thinking of the Tranmere Rovers statement, Kettering Town statement. You know, Kettering, if you look at their sort of history when they were sort of at step one and you know, the matches and the replays that they had. Exeter City, which of course is another fan-owned club.
Stevenage went to Newcastle.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's so the lack of consultation has been something which has been roundly and I think properly has been roundly and properly criticised. You know, for many clubs, it's Burton Albion. You know, Burton Albion going up. Was it Man United? I think wasn't it Burton Albion when they were non-league?
Went to Old Trafford.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know that. You know, many of those clubs are still in existence because of
that run, that
because
money.
Of those replays. Yeah. Andy, I can remember, I think, probably our first podcast together, and you mentioning the, you know, Wealdstone having a cup run, and the, you know, how that money had benefited not just the club but sort of, you know, the local community around Harrow.
Played Rotherham at home in the first round, and that money they got for that set them up for certain things for 10 years plus.
So this division of the money that's in the game and it's sort of being filtered down into the lower leagues is something I think which, you know, chairman across the board at step five and no doubt step six and step seven say, hang on, the game is so incredibly wealthy But all you're seeing is the wealthier clubs get wealthier, and the clubs at the very bottom, who provide sort of, in a sense, the, you know, the lifeline of football, you know, struggling even more to make ends meet. And that sort of disproportionate sharing of the game's wealth, staying much more in the hands of the, you know, the super rich clubs who, let's face it, they've got more money than they know what to do. Mm. And then you come down to our level and AFC at step four, and, you know, the clubs at step three, St Albans, Hamel at step two. You know, this is proper grassroots football, but in a sense, that money doesn't filter its way down to us. You know, you asked Matt was treasurer for 2 years, was it, Matt? 3 years?
Yeah, yeah. How, I mean, that was...
How many checks did we get from the FA, was it?
That's what I was going to come on to.
And Andy, sorry, if I can just interrupt you, mate.
Yeah, go.
We still haven't recovered the sort of the missing prize money that was slashed by 50% after COVID. So the FA prize money, so the FA Cup prize money, the FA Vase prize money, the FA Trophy prize money was slashed by 50% after COVID. Well, last season was still 50%. So, you know, for a club like us, which a couple of seasons ago when we had a decent little run, you know, I think we got 7,000, was it, Matt, in prize money? You know, it's then down to £3,500. Mm. And for a club like us, £3,500 is a fair chunk of money. So you multiply Dunstable Town's fortunes across the length and breadth of England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales, etc., those which have sort of, you know, the money through the FA, and you can see what a difference it makes. So yeah, it's unpopular across the board. I don't understand the logic behind it. I've not seen anything which to me has made sense in terms of saying, okay, well, that's a bit tough, but actually, yeah, no, I can see in the whole grand scheme of things why they've made that decision. But that's the bit that's lacking. I don't see any positive from it for the game as a whole.
Yeah. Mate, I 100% agree with you. Matt, I still remember chatting to you after the Tring game when we lost at home, and we were talking about money in football and what it does for non-league clubs. I mean, the FA have come out today, they put a statement out about a couple of hours ago saying, well, you know, they're going to broadcast the earlier rounds from like the prelim rounds for non-league clubs so they can maybe get... The way they worded it was absolutely pathetic. You know, it was an absolute cop-out excuse, you know, that money still might filter down to the likes of us and other teams, you know, step five, step, you know, step four, et cetera, et cetera. Matty, as a former treasurer, and, you know, some, me and you have spoke many a times, we, as a non-league club, you never budget for an FA Cup run, a trophy or a Vase, whatever level you play, you never budget for these kind of runs. But the FA Cup and an FA Cup replay, and I just used the term, you know, if we drew 0-0 at home to Wrexham and we got to go away to Wrexham, and you're going to get the TV money, you're going to get the FA, that money alone, for Dunstable Town, and Andrew used Willstone as an example. And I was, you know, many, many years ago when I was there and we got Rotherham in the first round, you know, it's so beneficial to non-league teams. Matty, what did you make of the whole? I know you have very strong views on this kind of thing, and I'm with you. I'm 100% agree with you on your views. But what did you make of the FA's announcement and obviously no replays as we go into next season's FA Cup?
Well, I mean, the first thing I'll say is one of the decisions they came to, I actually agreed with in terms of making sure that the games are actually played on a Saturday, because it did.
No midweeks anymore, yeah.
Having an FA Cup tie on a Tuesday, because you're already kneecapping yourself in terms of attendances, et cetera, because, you know, there's not as many people that can come on, in theory, that can come to Tuesday games and come to Saturday games. But overall, as you say, I struggle to understand the logic. And as Andrew said, you know, the fact that the Premier League are now saying they're going to be providing an additional £33 million to grassroots football on top of the £100 million it already gives to good causes, I'm yet to see part of that £100 million, let alone the additional £33 million. So that's just plain lip service to it. And I mean, literally, we just had a conversation not 2 minutes ago about how within the club, democracy rules. And in real life, that's how it should be. Whereas it's the richest 2% that are having the overwhelming opinion, which is driving the decision for the other 797 clubs that were in the FA Cup this season. I think it goes beyond the non-league football as well. So I've got a really good friend, Matt Robinson, who this week tweeted about Luton Town. So he's put in 2008, Luton Town were in League One, in administration, and facing a second successive relegation. They drew Liverpool at home in the FA Cup and earned a replay. The money generated from the game at Anfield, helped keep the club trading. This is a Premier League team, a current Premier League team that could have potentially gone bankrupt if they didn't have this replay.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically saying, well, tough. Yeah, I'm sure Luton Town would have voted in the right way, but I can't say the same about the majority of the other Premier League teams because it's so wrong. Somebody was saying about how they want to see the Super League take place because it just gets rid of those big six. And then we can actually play football where people actually care about the football. And yeah, don't get me wrong. I follow one of those big six in Liverpool. I've loved that club for quite a many years. But if they make a decision for the whole game, get rid, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm sick of it now. It's change this to improve the game, change that to improve the game. And it never does. You know, we look at the sin bins as an ideal example. This was a scheme that was trialed out to up to our level. It's not worked. They were looking to roll it out elsewhere. And now it's been pushed back down because everybody realises it don't work. I guarantee we'll still have it next season at this level. Something has to change. And I think it's important being part of the Football Supporters Association in part of being the CBS club, that we can actually give some clubs a voice. Yeah, the fact that Andrew goes up and speaks at conferences with the fellow FSA clubs shows that we do have representation towards the game. Now, are they going to be listened to? Who knows? But the more people who become Football Association associated, the voice gets bigger and, you know, it builds and builds, and hopefully that might be the way to improve the game. But until they do, I worry about how this is going to go.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, look at, you know, just finishing up with the Super League and everyone come together and the voices were heard and that Super League breakaway league didn't happen. So I'm hoping definitely for the sake of our club, because when we do get to the FA Cup first round next season and we do draw 0-0 with, I don't know, whoever, or we're 2-0 up and we can see two late goals in Dunstable Town fashion and we go away, and when we get to the third round and we go away to Old Trafford, I want to go to Old Trafford and see Dunstable Town win 1-0. So FA, sort yourselves out and make FA Cup replays the thing again. But Andrew, Matt, thank you so much for your time. I know you're going to have a busy week or so ahead. We are at home tomorrow. For those watching this tonight or listening tonight, we record this on a Friday evening. We are at home to Harpenden tomorrow. Then Tuesday, we have our final league game of the season. Next Tuesday, we are at Creasy Park at home to Sorbridgeworth. Two league games left. Come down tomorrow if you can. Come down Tuesday. Give Joe Deeney the send-off that he fully deserves at this football club. The man has literally done everything for this football club. He's given everything for this football club. I know for a fact that, you know, he's literally had no sleep and got in his car and drove to games. You know, he's become a new dad since he's been at Dunstable Town. I know the family time that he's given up just so he can help our football club and manage and do his job at Dunstable Town. I know how much effort he has put into this. So if we can get down to the Harpenden game, if we can get down to Sorbridgeworth on Tuesday, please do come down and support the lads. It hasn't been the greatest season, I'm not going to lie, but these lads no one goes out to want to lose a game of football. These lads have given absolutely everything for Dunstable Town this season. Let's go and cheer them on for the last two games. But make sure you check us out on Twitter. You can find us at DTFC Pod. I'm back tomorrow. I'm doing a YouTube interview for Brad, sitting down with Joe Deeney, where we're going to get into everything about the move, how it all come about, and his time at Dunstable Town. Then I'll be back with a post-match after the Harpenden game and the Sorbridgeworth game. But Andrew, Matt, I will catch you both tomorrow, and thank you so much for your time.
No worries.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Talk of the Town podcast. Make sure you go and check us out on Twitter and on YouTube. But till next time, everybody, up them mighty Blues.